I can assure you right here, this afternoon, right now, there's one, maybe two, maybe more, I don't know, that is here, but their mind's way out there. They've got an emotional problem, a relationship problem, money problem. No, they ain't got no money problem. No. I don't have any money problem. I got problems with money. All those things I was talking about, I'm the problem. Not that. But they're here. That member in a group is just as important to me. We hear it all the time. If you're new tonight to your first AA meeting, you're the most important one here. Baloney. We're all a society of equals in AA, but the welfare of that one at his first meeting is the most important thing. That's what's important. Their welfare. Because if they're ever going to get the message, no. Unless we are willing to sit and share with them. You betcha. And so the group has to go on functioning, regardless. Yet that's only one rare aspect of the picture. When we get sober and AA, begin to lose and throw off some of that big bits of ego. We admit I can't handle alcohol, but I can't stay away from it on my own. Fine. But then we find that there's still plenty of that ego with us. Sometimes it leads us into taking other members' inventories or gossiping about their supposed shortcomings. I guess I'm the only member of AA that's been guilty of it and sometimes still do. Or it may lure some into hogging the discussion at every discussion meeting. How many times have we heard, I quit going to that meeting. So-and-so is running the meeting. He's always introducing the program. He's always reading everything. He's saying the Serenity Prayer. He says the Lord's Prayer. He handles out the chips. He decides who's going to celebrate, who isn't, who else and that and this and that. Well, I tell you, if it's happening in your group, and you want to eliminate it, it's real simple. If we're asked to do anything in AA and you turn it down, don't gripe at the ones that are doing it. That's how simple the whole thing is. It has to get done somehow, somewhere. We're the victim of our own excuses. We're the victims of our own excuses. And so, as a result, you know, and but because what's caused? That causes immediate danger to our group. Because self-righteous gossip can and will damage the mutual trust that is vital among us. And another obstacle sometimes to unity is a well-known triangle. For in the cases, you know, half of our membership, their family relation had been distorted. And drinking had turned the husband and the wife and the household bad boys and girls. And thus, the spouse who's the alcoholic comes to AA, and they come in, you know, and they sit, and they see the opposite sex, and they hold hands, you know. You know? Well, when you got two sick people making love, all you got is sick love. So, and you know, and they used to call them Red Riding Hood and Wolf. Now, in a group in Dallas, they had a bunch in there that, you know, they're getting good for to get well. Oh, they come in, you know, and they quit drinking, quit smoking, quit cussing, started jogging. I've never been arrested for fat driving. I don't know about anybody. You know, and all them good things. And they had some in there, you know, what they called, and Bill liked Red Riding Hood and Wolves. And they were getting good, and they said, that bunch is going to ruin our reputation. We got to get them out of here. Well, you can't throw anybody out of AA. If you say you're a member, we've got to take your word for it. A club that's got incorporated and got rules and regulations, that's another thing. But an AA group's a spiritual entity, and if you're sober and you say you're a member, and you just ask them to be quiet for a little while. So, they couldn't do it. So they sat down and wrote Bill a letter. Dear Bill, we've got these Red Riding Hood and Wolves in our group, and they're going to ruin the reputation. What do we do? Bill writes back, dear group, are they staying sober? Love, Bill. Yeah, well, Bill doesn't know, really, he doesn't know really the true facts. So they sat down and wrote a more detailed letter. letter comes back from Bill Grubb. Are they still staying sober? Love, Bill. They said, Bill really doesn't understand how what it's going to do to us. So they sat down and he wrote some ugly things. It wasn't a question of what they were doing was right or wrong. This bunch over here, they didn't think it was the way they ought to do it. That's all. And so they sent this awful letter back up to Bill. They sent an airmail special certified return receipt request. The letter come back. Dear group, are they still staying sober? Love, Bill. Don't bother me anymore. Well, guess what happened? This bunch over here, the righteous ones, were so busy writing letters and waiting for the answer, when they finally looked over there, the problem had taken care of itself. And I am so thankful that this was shared with me my first 3 weeks in Alcoholics Anonymous. That David has got all David's got to do to take care of David's business and his relationship with his program and his creator. And you've got all you can do to take care of yours. And you don't need me butting in your personal business. And I don't need you butting in my personal business. And that is live and let live. That allows us all the freedom to either do the deal and face the consequences or don't do the deal and face the consequences. That's all. That's all. Usually the guilty ones are pointing at the ones that they think are worse than they are. I couldn't tell you this unless I experienced it in my own life. Because many times I was doing what they were doing. Not in AA. Now I'll tell you. No, I haven't. I've made all the mistakes. There's two I ain't. I ain't had a drink, and I ain't going to tell you the other. And so, but that was, you know, in the early days of AA, you know, talking about the unity of the group. Well, they had one group in the Manhattan group. They had two atheists in there, Hank Parkhurst and Jimmy Burwell. And old Jimmy, and every time they'd get to talking about God, now this is before the big book is written, you know, and they'd maybe read out of the book of James or something, and every time they'd mention God, old Burwell would just absolutely just get crazy. And they'd start fights. So finally it got so bad, the secretary would notify all the members of the group, except Jimmy, and they'd move the meeting. But Jimmy would find them. And they ran out of meeting place. Well, so what they going to do with Jimmy? So they went to Bill. Said, Bill, you got to do something. Bill says, send Jimmy to me. So Burwell comes to Jim. Bill says, Jim, Dr. Bob and myself are getting ready to start an automobile polish company. And we need to have someone as a salesman to go out on the road and sell it. Well, it just so happens that Jimmy had the only car in the Manhattan group. It was an old Lincoln Zephyr. Now, a car in those days was very valuable. You could go snatch drunks and bring them around. The group was willing to get rid of the car. Just again, because it belonged to Jimmy and he'd have to go with it, anything. Now, so Jimmy became the sales manager of a one-man sales force that to go out on the road to sell automobile polish that never was going to be manufactured. Bill just told him that. So he gets in and he goes to Philadelphia, 90 miles away. Now, what is good, every good, self-respectful, sober drunk needs to do? To stay sober. He went out and got him a wet drunk, and guess what? That wet drunk took the bait. And they started a little group in Philadelphia, and they used to run a blurb in the newspaper, you know, one column about some. If you're having trouble with alcohol and you want to get fixed, it read like a veterinarian's ad, then we've got this meeting at this hotel so-and-so and so-and-so at time. Now, in those days, you used to put guards out on the door. But only real alcoholics could come into the meeting. Well, in came this gal, and she was drunker than 9 billy goats. And they say at one time she was absolutely beautiful. She was an old show hoofer in one of them kick dance lines in vaudeville. We later got her in Dallas. She moved to Dallas. And she was just drunker than a billy goat. She come in with a flapper dress, and them fishnet hose, a little hat, you know, old boa wrapped around her neck with moth-eaten, and a big purse, really. She walks up and she said, "I come here to get fixed." The guard on the door says, "You go over there." She says, "What's over there?" He says, "That's for the others." "What do you mean, others? I got trouble with alcohol, and I come here to get fixed." He said, "I say you go, no woman's an alcoholic, you go over there." He didn't have any women in there. And so she reaches down and snatches out that piece from the newspaper and shoves it in his face. "Are you calling me a liar?" And with that, she reached down and took off one of those high heel sling pumps she had and got to beating on that drunk, and she had him down on the ground, darn near beat him to death. And out of desperation for his own life, he said, "Lady, if you need to get fixed that bad, you go in there." That guard on that door that meeting night was none other than Ebby, Bill's friend and sponsor. He later became Gladys's sponsor. Gladys got sober in between Marty's first and second sobriety. Marty got sober, and then she had a little spell there, and then she got sober again. And it's right along about in that era, and when she died, God, she moved to our group, and typical like the drunks in those days, God, I'll tell you what, I mean no offense, but when I come to AA and others, we had smokers meetings. I mean, everybody smoked. It looked like to me they did out of their ears, their nose, the hair, everything. You know what I'm talking about? And old Gladys, the reason I say this, Gladys, she smoked Picayune cigarettes. And all of that bunch, you know, regular coffee wasn't strong enough. They had to carry instant in their purses with a spoon. A tablespoon, not a teaspoon, and dose it up real good. Boy, I'll tell you, they used to call that the AA medicine. Yeah. Well, so, you know, and that's what, you know, the first gal to get sober in AA was Florence Rankin. And Florence got in right when they were trying to name the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They hadn't even named it yet. And so she come to a meeting, and they were horsing around with the doggone thing, and they had tried every kind of name in the world, and they decided, well, they're going to call it the first 100 men and a woman. And Florence got up and had the first 100 men, I beg your pardon. Florence had a woman alcoholic fit. She jumped up and says, "No, you're not. You're going to call it the first 100 men and a woman." They said, "We are not. It'll make the title too long." So they had a vote. She's the only one voted for it. They still hadn't done it, you know. Hell, they tried everything in the world. Now, really one of the best books to read about early AA history is not one of ours. It's a book entitled Lois Remembers. You see, Lois was sober when AA got started. And they got titles in there that we don't even know. Yeah. But then they still hadn't named it. You know, AA then is like it is now, you know. We got members that drag everything in. Oh, come on into AA. You got worms in your navel. You got fungus in your ears. Come in here and get flush with this spiritual enema and everything gonna be good. And so then it was, they dragged folks that ain't, you know, not alcoholic. But let me tell you the reason this one was drugged. They were all busted as we went through the writing of the big book. Now they got it out, they ain't named it yet. But one of the members, he had a friend. Now, the friend was locked up as a total insane human being in a maximum insane asylum in Connecticut. But he had a lot of money. Now, we read it in chapter 5. There are those two who recover from grave emotional and mental disorders. Many of them do if they develop the capacity to be honest. Well, you got to figure. And that's dangerous for our kind. He got to figure. If he could just get him into AA. maybe in a temporary fit of sanity, he will reach in his wallet and his checkbook and just write a big check for oodles of money. So he goes to the superintendent of the insane asylum. Then he goes to the chief psychiatrist, and he gets him released to come to an AA meeting with him. And they bring him to the meeting, and they park him over in a corner. Now, in the old Manhattan group, Bill used to sit in the center of the floor, and he had a three-legged sewing stool. And when he wanted this one to talk, he'd point a leg here, and then he'd point a leg here, and he'd roll a leg here. That later became the model for the triangle and the circle. Us drunks, we don't give up nothing. And so they were arguing about what to call the book. And during the argument, the nut in the corner was mumbling. Bill said to the member of AA, "Your friend over there, he's disturbing our meeting. Do something about it." So he got up to go over there. He got halfway across the room. He turned around and he says, "Shh, boys, listen to what he's mumbling." You know what that idiot was mumbling? Anonymous alcoholic, anonymous alcoholic, anonymous alcoholic. Now, the two words, Alcoholics Anonymous, had been used very, very sparingly in the Cleveland-Clanton area, but not in the New York area. And he said, "Well, what about Alcoholics Anonymous?" And so you see, in AA, you have to remember, if you get good before you get well, remember from whence our name came from a nut. See, there's nothing that's invented in Alcoholics Anonymous. There is nothing original. We've just taken all those things. And the name was suggested by, one of the writers from that particular magazine. That magazine is still in existence, you see. And so it became apparent that our relationships between sexes wasn't going to break us up, and our fears in that area subsided. But like other societies, we find forces among us that threaten us in ways that alcohol and sex could not, or money. These are the desires for power, for domination, for glory, and again for money. They're all the more dangerous because they are invariably powered by self-righteousness and self-justification, and for the destructive power of anger. Pride, fear, and anger, these are the prime enemies of our common welfare. Because if we're going to have harmony and love fortified by clear insights and right practices, they're the only answers. So for the purpose of AA's traditional principle is to bring these forces to the top and keep them there. And then can our common welfare be served. And only then can AA's unity become permanent, because the preservation of AA's unity is not only a life and death matter for us, but also for the alcoholic who is still unrecovered. You see, if a group sticks to the common welfare, and what's the common welfare? Let's stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety by giving every member of AA the best shot. Then when you leave the group meeting, do whatever you want to out there. That's up to you if you can live with it or if you can live without it. The second tradition, for our group purpose there is but one ultimate authority, loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And I'll tell you, when this tradition first hit Alcoholics Anonymous, and when Bill was literally traveling around the United States and North America, literally promoting the traditions so they would be adopted at the first international conference in Cleveland in 1950. God, when he got to the group, the oldest member of the groups, they had hernias. They said, "What do you mean? A loving God is the conscience of the group. By gosh, I'm the conscience of the group. My group ain't got no conscience. Without me, they ain't got it. I'm it. I took them drunks off the streets. They got them from barefoot to socks to shoes. I got them from rolling bugler to ready roll cigarettes. I got them. I went on a cosign on a little note. I went to talk to their mama, their papa, their preacher, their grandpa, their grandma, their kids, their employer. I went everywhere to them. And by God, if it wouldn't be for me, they wouldn't be sober, they wouldn't be working, they wouldn't be married, and they wouldn't be nothing. Don't come up to me with this God business. You know? Oh, yeah. That's quickly recognize a power driver. Hey, we call that the group wrecker. And he or she is still around. The member who is always sure that he or she is always right. The member who is happily ready to assume all the burdens of leadership and grimly unwilling to share them, let them give them up. And he said, now, hey, we're getting ready to have an election. You see the kind of folks that are coming to our group? God, they got long hairs and they got chains down to their po-po's. And they wear them Jesus shoes and their toes thump like gourds when they walk. And they up and down and they're swallowing and they're out and here and there making noise and moving around. My God, we're having an election. We can't let afford that kind of crowd to get in. Now, by God, I want you to gather up all of the ones you'll sponsor. And the ones you sponsor, tell them to gather up everybody they sponsor. And we got this business meeting, and we're going to vote. And I'm going to sit on the front row. And when I raise my hand, you raise your hand at the same time. That's what you call grimly unwilling to give them up, you know? Yeah. So, that is both of democracy and Bill Wilson's word, a benign anarchy. A group elects its own officers who have no power to order anybody to do anything. So what's the big deal if you're elected the head drunk in your group? There ain't no big honor to be known as the head sick. We worry needlessly too much about the actions of people who we elect. They can't hurt us. They can't get us drunk. They can't kick us out of AA. I use they or he or she can't. Let them stew in their own pot. It takes care of itself. If there's anything somebody that's elected to AA hates more than anything in the world is when everybody ignores them and don't listen to what they have to say. And then they get the message, don't they? You know, then they get the message. My sponsors told me a long time ago, David, there's 6 inches separates a halo from a noose. Yeah. And so, yeah, so what's the big deal if you're known as the head sick, you know? Yeah. And no big deal. In most groups, most of the slate rotates out of office at the end of 6 months, and then new ones are elected. And if a group wants to be a part of the worldwide AA service, then it elects a GSR, and I know all y'all with the same 2-year time period frame of service as a delegate and et cetera, and then GSRs along with the district committee members and other voting members elect committee members and join them. Now, I'm using AA's broad experience overall. Now, I realize that there are some areas in some states, very few, that do not follow the third legacy manual. But I'm using that as my... What's so funny? Y'all must be one of the states. Well, you're free, you're autonomous to do it. I tell you, no. But I'm just using, that's the reason why I say when I say most GSRs and most DCMs, because in some areas the DCMs are the ones that vote, some areas they're the ones that don't vote, some areas only the GSRs vote, even the area committee members don't vote. Now, yeah, and so you run into that in AA as a process of evolution, because if there's anything, if you want to get a drunk to do something, just tell him not to. If you were having trouble getting your babies to read the big book, you take that big book and you say, now look, you are not to read this big book for one solid year. 10 days later, they have memorized it and they'll start telling it. Yeah. 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 And so as a result, this is the way it works, you know. And, you know, I tell you, then we ask, well, who's in charge around here? Well, there is a spiritual movement. So the ultimate authority is the spiritual concept of the group conscience. Its voice is heard when a well-informed group gathers to arrive at a decision. The result rests more and more than just on arithmetic or yes or no count. Minority ideas get very thoughtful attention. Thank God. In Alcoholics Anonymous, the minority in many instances has become the majority. I've been a voting member of 6 General Service Conferences, and I've seen them pass an advisory action. And the next morning, as soon as the conference convenes, someone gets up to the microphone and says, you know, I had a tough time sleeping last night. I got up and I walked around the cities of New York in the lobby of the hotel. What we voted on and starts talking about is very uncomfortable. I don't think it is good for the whole of AA. And you look around and at this bank of microphones and there's another one. And the next thing you know, there's another one. And the next thing you know, there's another one. And an hour later, the chair at the conference says, well, what do you want to do? And someone makes a vote, proposes a vote that they rescind what they did. Somebody seconds it. They go discuss it. The next thing you know, what was voted on the previous day is unvoted the next day. In the General Service Conference, this year's General Service Conference is not binding on what last year's service conference did. It can change up anything it wants to. It certainly can. And therefore, and because that minority got up and those who voted the other way the previous day said, I never looked at that viewpoint. That's the reason why it's very important, if your group will let you, if you feel that you're uncomfortable about something in the group. Most of them are afraid to get up in front of the group and say, hey group, you know, I'm uncomfortable about this or that. You're afraid, number one, they won't be liked. You're afraid they'll be criticized. You're afraid your babies will do something. No. Who's hurting the most? The group a lot of times doesn't even know a member is uncomfortable in a group until that member tells them. That's all. And that makes for good conversation, and it also makes for very tremendous good experience. And so, what about that annoying character who always says he's right? You better listen. Maybe just this once he or she is right. And if he or she is wrong, then they will if they remember the first tradition as well as the second. You see? And go along with the decision of the group conscience. Does this notion seem cloudy? Well, let's all go back to our first AA meeting. The presence that we newcomers felt in these rooms were the same as a group conscience. They welcomed us in. It was real. They didn't set up any barriers, and they didn't set up any rules. Well, let's have a 15-minute break, and we're right on target at 3 o'clock. Tradition 3. However, I failed to make this disclaimer that no one speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. No one has that right. No one has that authority. And no one has been so designated. We're just simply asked to share our experiences, not our opinions. Because we find as a result of our experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous that opinions in many, many instances have a tendency to make sick people sicker. And in some instances to physically kill people. And so tradition 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. You know, AA was and is still very concerned about our membership. In fact, when heavy publicity first came AA's way, and even today, when there is more publicity about alcoholism than ever before, a lot of the older members in sobriety and years of it become scared And they say to themselves, won't all kinds of odd people show up, you know, who will have complications, alcohol mixed with pills and other things. Now, in the older days, and even today, we don't hear it as much today. We talk about that mythical character called the pure alcoholic. No complications, you understand, just a guzzler. Well, many who came to AA at first actually thought like they were like that themselves, and therefore, when new members began mounting in, AA's worry mounted. And they began to ask questions, won't there be some mighty queer people? Won't there be criminals? Won't there be certain amount social undesirables? Won't there be degenerates? Wouldn't AA be dull with if just straight normal folks came in? God, we'd cry for a weirdo, you know. With us, it's normal, you know. You have to remember that the reason that society doesn't understand this out there, that we're wired backwards. Our rear end is in our head, and our head is in our rear end. That's the precise reason we can't sit in a meeting more than an hour. We wear our brains out. You know, I don't know about you. They tell me don't, wet paint, don't touch. That's the first thing I touch. I tell you what I love to test. Don't take food or drink out of the dining room. I love that. Don't walk on the grass, you know. And now if they say, we suggest you not walk on the grass, I give it a lot of courtesy. But when they say don't, and so as a result, they were all so worried about what was going to show up in AA. And you know what? We simply do not know what or who's going to show up. And since AA's inception, every kind of a human being that's an alcoholic has found their way into AA. Now you say, well, isn't every organization entitled to have rules or for membership? Well, why did AA forego this privilege and become all-inclusive and not exclusive? That's simple. Early members tried it the other way, and it didn't work. As our fellowship was nearing its 10-year mark, all the groups that were in correspondence with the office were asked to send in their membership rules. And if all of those rules were enforced every place, everywhere throughout Alcoholics Anonymous, it would have been impossible for an alcoholic to become a member of AA. Bill and Dr. Bob could not have been members of AA. If one reads Bill's story, Bill, you know, alcohol and sedatives, and Dr. Bob, alcohol and barbiturates. And so, as a result, neither one of them could have been members of Alcoholics Anonymous. 90% of our best members never would have been ever. So the rule books were thrown out and was replaced by one uncomplicated sentence, Tradition 3. But then somebody asked, isn't this tradition itself a rule? It does state one requirement for membership. Well, what is it? The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Well, there's one thing that some fail to forget. That the first A in that AA is alcoholics. It's not addicts, and it's not addiction, but alcoholics. It's a registered trademark. It belongs to us, and its misuse, if we do not prosecute it, then we will lose it. That's how simple that thing is. And so, as a result, but it does state one requirement. Okay. Well, let's read it again and ask another question. Who in Alcoholics Anonymous has been designated, has the authority, legal or illegal, to determine whether a newcomer qualifies, whether he or she wants to stop drinking? I've been in a lot of A groups all over this world, And I've never been in one that's got an instrument that you can stick in, up, down, and through an alcoholic to see how alcoholic you are, or to see if you're going to stay sober, or to see if you're going to get drunk. Now, AA is designed very specifically. The only one that can say if they want it or not is the newcomer himself or herself. Regardless of if they come from courts or anybody else. Because AA is designed that, what is it? What is it? Now, they read a portion of chapter 5, and it says, if you decide you want what we have, and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. Now, if you drink, you can't have it. This is what they tell us. What is it that we have? It's a way of life to live in this world of reality sober. Now, this is what separates. Many get the recovery program confused and don't realize that it is what produces the way of life. We want the way of life. We want the fun. We want the hugging and the kissing and all that kind of stuff. And rubbing up against, that started more groups now, Alcoholics Anonymous than anything else. And so, but what is it? It's this way of life. A way of life. Now, only the newcomer, deep down inside, as it says in our book, until we concede to our innermost self that we are alcoholic, this is the first step in recovery. Not who somebody else concedes in their selves that I am an alcoholic, but until I am willing to do something about it, it's still strictly theory. And I'm the kind of an alcohol human being who is an alcoholic, that as long as I can get that human being to believe I'm really doing it, knowing deep I ain't, and as long as I can get him to believe it, I don't have to do too much about it. I don't have to do a thing about it. As long as I can snow him that I'm doing it. But it's pretty hard to do that if one has got a sponsor who understands the nature of the illness and who has gone around the horn a couple of times. It's very difficult to get away from them. They're just like gum on the heel of your shoe. You can't get rid of them. And so, as a result, only the newcomer himself or herself. Obviously, no one except them. Everybody's got to simply take their word for it. In fact, you don't even have to say it aloud. And that was fortunate for many of us who arrived at AA with only a half-hearted desire to stay sober. We're alive because the AA road stayed open for us. The problem faced by this tradition isn't just past AA history. It keeps cropping up, for instance, when a group debates or argues about whether to exclude alcoholics who are also hooked on other drugs. Now, the tradition mentions no such negative requirements. You can read it from now on to doomsday. It certainly doesn't. No demands that the prospective member must not be a pill addict, a homosexual or an ex-convict, a person with a record of mental illnesses. All alcoholics are welcome. Now, we have to remember about members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Members of Alcoholics Anonymous were, are, and will always be alcoholics, even though we may have other addictions. Well, the AA doesn't call it addiction. That comes outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's just as bad to oppose a controversy as it is to endorse it. They can call us all ever we want to, but it's a funny darn thing. Why do they send them to us? Because we've got the success and the residual rate, and mainly we got the maintenance program. You see, we got the maintenance program. And then we put up with each other a lot better, and on top of that, we don't have to see if our insurance policies are paid up. Yeah. We pay for it before we get here. This is free. This whole program is freedom. Free of alcohol, free of herself. and the mechanics and the recovery program and the principles to do it. And you know, I like to use in this particular tradition and experience, it just tells it all. On the old 24th Street Clubhouse on 23rd Street in New York City, now that's typical of AA. Barry was alive and the door opened and a policeman drugged his character in, two policemen drugged his character. And he said, this needs to be here. It doesn't need to be in jail, that you people can do more for it than we can, and left. Now I'm going to describe the character, and I'm going to call it for a little while. It had on a lady's dress, carrying a lady's purse, wearing a lady's hat, hair was blonde, had lipstick, rouge, and eye makeup, ladies' silk hose, tennis shoes on, ladies' earrings, and it was black. Barry looked at him. Barry was on the desk, and Barry looked at this character and says, do you want to stop drinking alcohol? He said, more than anything else in the world, but man, let me tell you, I've been on horse. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is, that's heroin. That's what they called it in those days. And I've been on snow and smack. That's cocaine, or they call it nose candy today. And I have been on those California turnaround. Barry said, wait a minute. I didn't ask you that. I asked you, what did you want to do about stopping drinking alcohol? He said, man, more than anything else in this world. Well, over in the corner in that clubhouse is a bunch of rednecks were playing dominoes. And they looked over there and saw that character standing there with that dress and that lipstick on and said, get that out of here. It's going to ruin our reputation. Now, that bunch hadn't worked over in 9 or 10 months. They're what we call in AA clubhouse cripples, you know, laying around in mooch all the time. And so anyway, as a result, they said, get it out. Barry said, but it wants to stop drinking. They said, we don't care what it wants to stop. Get it out. That we can't have that around here. Why, God, it'll run off all them folks. Barry said, but it wants to stop drinking. So two of them got up from the domino table, got hit by the elbows, took him to the door and threw him out on the porch, closed the door. Well, in those days, if they had any trouble any place anywhere in AA and Bill was around, they'd call Bill. So Barry called Bill, said, Bill, you better get down here at the clubhouse. We got a problem. Bill said, what's the deal? Barry said, get down here. So Bill hops a cab and he comes down and he's walking through the door backwards and he almost trips over and he points back outside. What's that? Barry said, that's the problem. So Bill said, well, what's the deal? And Barry tells how the police come in, et cetera, et cetera. And so Bill said, Barry, did you ask him if he wanted to stop drinking alcohol? He said, yes, I did. Bill said, what did he say? He said, more than anything else in the world. But Bill, he also is on heroin, and he's on the needle, and he's on the powder, and he's taking all them goofy. Bill said, Barry, I didn't ask you what he was on. I asked you if he wanted to stop drinking alcohol. Barry says twice. Bill said, what did he say about stopping drinking alcohol? He said, more than anything else in this world. He said it twice. Bill said, that's all we need to know, and that's all we need to hear. Bill went and opened the door, picked it up, brought him in, took him over to them table where they're playing dominoes. He says, boys, I want you to meet the newest member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He needs you, and you need him. And that tells the whole story. You see, we get caught up in them andas, you know, and all that stuff, and we fail to ask them, do you want to stop drinking alcohol? And if they say yes, and you'd be surprised, you're going to get a few that, well, I don't need to, I never drank. And they say, well, what are you doing here? See, this is how we inform each other. Yeah. Yeah. That's the first requirement. There's a desire to stop drinking. Yeah. And so it's not really confusing. It really isn't, you know. Because as a result, you know, we're so worried about a lot of things. And the worry is groundless to a degree. Because sometimes we're going to get some weird characters in here. That's fine. Of course, our public relations are important, but in the real character of our society, still more important. Who dares to say, no, you can't come in, and perhaps executioner of their brother and sister alcoholic? So the experience throughout the years has distilled now into tradition three. You are an AA member if you say so. No matter what you have done, what you are doing, or what you ever will do, you are an AA member if you say so. I cannot determine whether anyone in here is an AA member. All I can tell you, I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can tell you, and I assume you do, you don't even have to tell me. And I believe, frankly, that if we'll keep it to where that and go on about the business do you do, you know, more than anything else in the world. You know, one of the greatest pamphlets to read is Problems Other Than Alcohol. In it, it's got everything in this world. It was originally written as an article in the Grapevine. And then the conference asked AAWS to put it out as a service piece. And so it is in pamphlet form, you know. And you know, and I'm going to go over a little bit with you, because in it is still got the basis and the essence of everything. Perhaps there is no more suffering, more horrible than drug addiction, especially the kind that is produced by cocaine, morphine, heroin, and other narcotics. And such drugs twist the mind, and the awful process of withdrawal racks the human sufferer's body. Now, compared to the straight addict and his woes, us alcoholics are pikers. You've never lived until you've tried to work with a straight addict. If you think an alcoholic will lie to you, an addict will wet on you and convince you it's raining. They'll steal everything you got and help you go hunting. Yeah. Barbiturates carried to the extremes can also be almost as bad. Now, AA, we have AA members who have made great recoveries from both the bottle and the needle. We also have a great many others who were and still are victimized by street drugs, goofballs, and tranquilizers. So consequently, the problem of pure drug addiction and its several form lies close to every one of us, and it stirs our deepest imagination and sympathy. Many AAs, especially those who have suffered these particular addictions, are now asking, what can we do about drugs within our fellowship and without? Well, we can't do nothing about it without. Now, because several projects to help pill and drug takers are already afloat, programs which try to use AA's 12 steps, and in which members of Alcoholics Anonymous are also active in those programs, there's risen a whole series of questions as to how these efforts, thank God, due to the fact, like Rockefeller with the old boys in AA, and due to the fact that AA World Services Incorporated steadfastly refused to give narcotics or let Narcotics Anonymous use our 12 steps, They wanted to use it and say it's with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in their own recovery book, and AAWS says no. That forced them to come out with a tremendous book of their own. Their first step reads such that we are powerless over our addictions and our lives have become unmanageable. And that changed up the whole picture for those people. You know? And so as a result, they got their own deal going, and now it's a singleness of purpose for them. They have other membership problems that AA doesn't have, but that's another strike for us and a strike for them. And as a result, you know, there's risen a whole series of questions as to how these efforts can be rightly related to AA groups and to AA as a whole. Now, I'm going to go over the questions. Some of y'all have read the questions, but let's ask them again in a room. Can a non-alcoholic pill or drug addict become an AA member? Can such a person be brought to as a visitor to an open AA meeting for help and inspiration? Can a pill or drug taker who also has a genuine alcohol history become an AA member? Can AAs who have suffered both alcoholism and drug addiction form themselves into a special purpose group to help other AAs who are having drug problems in addition to the alcohol? Could such a special purpose group call itself an AA group? Could such a group also include non-alcoholic drug users? If so, could these non-alcoholic pill or drug users be led to believe that they have become AA members? Is there any objection if AAs who have had the dual problem join outside groups such as Narcotics Anonymous? While some of these questions answer themselves, others do not, but we think that we can readily resolve them to the satisfaction of everyone. Now, if we have a good look at AA's traditions, which apply, and another look at our long experience with the special purpose groups in which members of AA are active today, some within and some without our society. Now, there are certain things that AA cannot do for anyone, anywhere, regardless of what our several desires and sympathies may be. Sobriety. Freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of AA's 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. Groups have repeatedly tried other activities and have always failed. We have also learned that there is no possible way to make non-alcoholics into AA members. AA found out long ago, and it's finding out the hard way a lot of times, many groups, that we have to confine our membership to alcoholics. If we do not stick to this principle, we shall almost surely collapse, and if we collapse, we'll never be able to help anyone. Now, years ago, we hoped to give AA membership to our families and to other, in those days, to their families and other non-alcoholic friends who had been greatly helpful. They had their problems too, and they wanted them in the fold. But, regretfully, they found that it was impossible to make non-alcoholics into AA members. First of all, they couldn't make straight AA talks. We've got a lot of members of AA that can't make a straight talk, AA talk today. And save for a few exceptions, could they identify with new AA members. Hence, they couldn't do continuous 12-step work. Close to us, as those good folks were, AA had to deny the membership. We could only welcome them at our open meetings. Therefore, AA has found out that there's no way of making non-alcoholic addicts into AA members. And I know that some have come to us and they say, well, a drug is a drug is a drug is a drug. You know, or a chemical is, you took, that was the chemical of your choice, David, alcohol. Them goofies were the chemical of my choice. And I have to look them in the eye and say, I don't know about you, Buster, but I never went to the whiskey store and told that man to sell me a half gallon of chemicals. But if I want a half gallon of goofies, I'll go to the drugstore. But I've never gone to the whiskey store and tell me, sell me a half gallon of chemical. He'll shoot me. Yeah. And we get all cut up in this, caught up in this exercise about alcoholics. You have to remember about alcoholics. All alcoholics are liars, but all liars are not alcoholics. All alcoholics are cowards, but all cowards are not alcoholics. All alcoholics are procrastinators, but all procrastinators are not alcoholics. All alcoholics are full of fear. All people who are full of fear are not alcoholics. Or in other words, alcoholics are everything, but everything not alcoholic. And so, as I said before, you know, alcohol and other things, sure, yeah, that qualifies. Well, we'll go into that in a minute. And so, as a result, our experience has shown that it'd be hard on the straight drug user himself or herself, but more important, as well as AA. We must accept the fact that no non-alcoholic, whatever their affiliation, can be converted into an alcoholic member. Suppose, though, we are approached by a drug addict who nevertheless has had a genuine alcohol history. Yes, they qualify. AA, such as the sum of AA cannot do for non-alcoholic addicts. But like anyone else, they should be able to attend certain open AA meetings, provided, of course, that the group themselves are willing. Tradition 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Now, a member who does any amount of traveling finds the AA spirit much the same everywhere. But apart from that inward kinship, there are vast differences among groups. A traveler may find three members discussing the steps in the back seat of somebody's car or living room. Somewhere else, they may listen to 300, 400, 500 talkers in an auditorium. In one part of the United States, respectful silence greets the speaker who begins, "Hi, everybody, my name is David A., and I'm an alcoholic." In another, when you get up and give your name, everybody hollers back, "Hi, back." But, you know, in the Northeast, they're just not getting around to it. I remember when I happened to be a delegate, and I think it was my 10th AA birthday, I think. And anyway, yeah, it was. And we went, and Wednesday night was an open meeting, and it happened to be my 10th AA birthday. So we went to this meeting there in New York City, and their meetings are an hour and a half. And they have the format. They have beginners, and then they have a secretary's break, and they take up the money right there and then. And then the announcements, and then they have a talker for around about 45 minutes. They'll go to 10 o'clock. Well, there was a bunch of us from the conference that were there, and all of us delegates from Arkansas and Louisiana and Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama and Tennessee and a part of Kentucky. They call us the Bible Belt AAs. I don't know why. And so we all decided, there's about 20 or 30 of us decided to go to this meeting. And when this member of AA got up and said, "Hi, my name is Joe, I'm an alcoholic," we hollered, "Hi, back." Well, they don't do that up there. And about 300 and some odd people turned around and said, "What's going on?" You know? Well, those people up, you know, you have to remember about up there in that part of the world, they're not cold, that's just defective character. And so, you know, they don't. And in some places, they give themselves by their full name. There are one-hour meetings, there are hour-and-a-half meetings, there's three-hour meetings, there's candlelight meetings, there's incense-burning meetings, there's 5:30 in the morning meetings. There's every kind of meeting all over the world. A group is free to work out its local customs. But as always, freedom brings responsibility. Because each group is autonomous, it is up to each group to avoid any and all action and that would bring about, you know, that might harm AA. And there have been such actions, or this tradition never would have been necessary. Some groups think they run everything in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And so the fourth tradition is like, it's like the fourth step. It suggests that an AA group should take honest inventory of its planned actions, asking about each of its independently planned actions. Would this violate any tradition? Like the individual member who chooses to make the 12 steps his or her guide towards happy sobriety, the wise group recognizes that the traditions are not hindering handicaps or technicalities. They are proven guides towards chief objectives of all AA groups. As our individual group develop progresses, we obey the traditions for other reasons. We obey them because we think they are right for us. We obey these principles because we know they are good principles, even though we'll still resist somewhat. Then comes the final level of obedience. We obey these traditions and steps because we really want to for ourselves, not for any other human being, but for ourselves. It is no longer a question to whether they're right or wrong, whether bad or good. We conform because we genuinely want to conform, such as our progress and growth in unity and in function, and such as the evidence of God's great love among us. Now, many people wonder, how does this deal work? Particularly those outside of AA. How can AA function under such seeming anarchy? Other societies have to have law and order and sanction and punishment administered by authorized people. Happily for us, we found we need no human authority whatever. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we have two authorities. We have alcohol as we understand him, and we have God as we understand him. And one heals, and one kills. And we don't need any human beings having their handles on authority. You see? There is God, our Father, who said, here's my will. Live it. And alcohol says, if you don't take and use God's will and live it, I'll kill you. And sometimes he does. And sometimes God does cure. Alcohol does cure. And so when all the chips are down, we conform to God's will or we perish. And at this level, the death sentence hangs over the AA member, his group, and AA as a whole. You bet you. How many times they've said, you'd rather be drunk than sober. How do we know? How do we know? You say, well, what do you tell them? You say, why don't you just stay here and let us love you? That's all. That's all. May have to say it 19 times in 10 minutes. Yeah. 19 times in 10 minutes. Just stay here till we love you. It's just like when you make a 12-step call on a wet drunk. You walk in and say, what do you want to do about stopping drinking? And they say, yeah, but you don't know my wife. You say, I didn't ask you that. What do you want to do about stopping drinking? But you don't know my children. I didn't ask you that. What do you want to do about stopping drinking? But you don't know my banker. I didn't ask you that. What do you want to do about stop drinking? But you don't know about who I work for. I didn't ask you that. What do you want to do about stopping drinking? An hour and a half later, you mean that's all you want to know what I want to do about stopping drinking? I said, that's all I'm here for. Well, what if I don't stop? I says, thank you. That's the answer I want to leave. Yeah. Then they know you mean business. That's all. See, what else is it involved? If the only requirement for AA membership is desire to stop drinking, they're not talking about Welch's grape juice. No. The simplicity. I'm thankful this is the way I was raised in AA. He said, just get your butcher knife out and go right to the core and point it and say, now this is it. Either you do the deal or you don't. One of the two. Make up your mind. And the butcher knife at you, you ain't got too much of a choice. And then they say, visualize that whiskey bottle. Because the last thing alcohol told me when he pitched me through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous on April the 20th, 67, it says, listen, dummy, you better stay there inside because if you poke your head out, I'll kill you. And so, it's the greatest backstop against dissolution. And it's in final guarantee of survival under any and all circumstances. For across to us, it's for do or to die. Tradition 5. Oh, yeah. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Now, every newcomer learns the hard way. And some of us a harder way, that this business of staying sober must have top priority. If we fail at that, we cannot succeed at anything else. The fifth tradition just simply reminds us that groups should remember their one primary purpose. Because when a group sticks with the recovery program, now, the first tradition tells us our common welfare. What we're here for. The second tradition tells us who's the boss. The third tradition just simply says this, no rules or regulation. The reason it's called Alcoholics Anonymous, do you want to stop drinking alcohol? And if you do, we have a way for you to live without drinking alcohol. The fourth tradition allows it to be an AA group or a BB group. You know what a BB group is? It ain't AA. And then it turns to the only reason that an AA group is in business, and that is the fifth tradition. Yeah. Its primary purpose. And then tradition 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 maintain it. So it puts everything in the proper perspective. And as a result, if we fail at that, we'll never be able, if we fail at our sobriety or group, we fail in there, and then nothing's going to work. Now, very often, unthinking enthusiasm puts a group off the main track. I've seen groups, for example, offer expanded AA programs that include helping newcomers find jobs. Tradition 5 doesn't frown on an individual member of AA who tells another about a good job. But when the group turns itself into an employment agency, a jail getting in, jail getting out, banking, lawyering, marriage counseling, divorce counseling, medical, religious, then the newcomer may get confused about the primary purpose of an AA group. AA's function is to help an old boy or gal after they get physically sober to stay sober, and then that drunk can get themselves a job or they can quit a job. AA is not interested if I'm working, and AA is interested if I'm not working. All AA says to me, do you want to live sober, David? That's all it says to me. Then I have to find, this alcoholic has to find, the things in this alcoholic's pot that he has to give up and discard. And you have to do that for yourself. That painful process is called deflation of ego in and out death. There's a reason why it cautions us now. We shouldn't be surprised. It says, remember that you said you're willing to go to every length, any length, to become victory over alcohol. That you're willing to go to any length. And that means all the way. But many of us fail to remember that AA gave us the time frame in which to do it, and that is one day at a time. We just do it today. Many get their timing out of whack. They're putting next week in today's time frame, and it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. And they're trying to drag yesterday in today's time frame. And that is regret. Tomorrow's fears. And the day goes by. It's the same way with living our traditions. Whether it be group or what area you want to apply the traditions. Yeah. And you know, the A group is not everything for everybody. Now, I had been off somewhere and I met this member of AA. And he came into our home, Dallas, and he didn't have a place to stay. And the boys were already gone, and so Grace and I said, well, you can have the back bedroom. And there he was. And he'd been there for about 3 or 4 months, and then he disappeared. And one night, why, there's a knock on my door, and in come two gentlemen, and a policeman is a policeman is a policeman. I don't care if he's got close-cropped hair, smoking a pipe with a mustache, with white lisle socks and wearing hush puppies, or whether he's got long hair and designer jeans and snake boots. They're all alike. They're born with an impediment. Their hand comes, yeah, they automatically, here it comes, their picture, their badge number, their everything. And the other one had a long sheet of paper. The one with the badge says to me, are you so-and-so? I said, yes, sir. Well, we have a warrant for the arrest of someone that's supposed to be staying with you, and also a search warrant to search you out. I said, well, come in. Who are you looking for? And when they told me, I said, he has left, and he's been gone a couple of weeks. But I'll take you to the room that he lived in, and in the closet he left two boxes. I don't know what's in them. And so we went, and they got the boxes, and they opened them up, and there was ladies' jewelry and watches and transistor radios and rings. They looked at me and said, you don't know anything about this? I says, no. Well, are you sure you're not one of his accomplices? I said, I'm very sure. Well, you'll have to go with us. And so they put me in the squad car, and that's a thrill to go in a squad car sober. They didn't even handcuff me. And they put me in the back seat with another one of those detectives. And I'm laughing all the way down to the jail. We get down, we go before the night desk sergeant, and the two detectives say, we executed this warrant, but we couldn't find so-and-so, but we did find these jewelry and other things, and we're going to take it over to the police property room and have it properly inventoried. And maybe we can find out who the rightful owners are. But in the meanwhile, we're leaving him with you. And so they left. The minute they left, the desk sergeant took his glasses off. He looked up at me, and he shook his head, and he says, sponsor, when are you going to learn? Now, I'd already told him about it, and that's the reason I was laughing. He said, get out of here. Yeah. And, you know, you've never lived, and I'll tell you, until they burnt your house down, you've never lived until you've invited an alcoholic to be a temporary guest in your home, and they stay a year. Oh, that's an experience you must not miss. Oh, yeah, and they take your car and go off with it and everything else. I'll tell you, that's something else. But I'll tell you, You know, even when acting on our own as an individual member, an AA layman certainly shouldn't award himself or herself an honorary medical degree and hand out diagnosis and prescriptions and amateur analysis of other people's neuroses and sicknesses. Now, because this exact failing is so common in AA,